going on, everybody? It's Cody from Mojo Break, and I am happy to be talking to a guy who has really made a name for himself, obviously, in the art world. But now, if you're into the hobby, I'm sure you've seen a lot of this stuff, Tops 2020. We got Project 70 coming out, the 1951 Tops. Lots of great stuff to talk about with Blake Jameson, who I am speaking with now. Blake, what's going on, man? Good to talk to you.
What's up, Cody? I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. But before we get into the art, I got to talk about you're a Bay Area guy, right?
I am, man. Okay. Marin County, born and raised.
There you go. Okay. South Bay. We're based in Santa Clara. So cool. San Jose, born and raised. Nice. I know you've got the A's gear on. So you say Marin County.
I used to go down to San Jose Earthquakes games.
Dude, have you been recently?
Not in a long time. It was like in high school. My dad and I had season tickets.
Okay, so you're talking like, what, Spartan Stadium, maybe Buckshaw? I'm trying to think where they were playing at that point.
It was at Spartan Stadium, I think.
Okay,
And then they moved somewhere else. So they moved to Spartan Stadium. At first, they were playing it like at a college stadium for a little while for the first season that I was going. Anyways, been a while. But man, I love the Bay Area. The South Bay is great.
Absolutely. Yeah, you should make it out that new Avaya Stadium is like something to behold. It's really cool. But let's start there because we got to talk some Bay. I know you grew up a Bay Area sports fan and Oakland A's fan. Do I got that right?
Yeah. So, Oakland A's. And I mean, I've always liked the Giants, too. Somebody asked on one of my live streams, my dad, who I used to go to baseball games with, is always on the streams. And someone asked him why we went to so many A's games and not as many Giants. And he just said it was because it was so cold. Because the A's, that was when the Giants, I guess, were playing in Candlestick, right? And it was
exactly
freezing. And so it was like, it was just a weather decision. But grew up going to A's games, idolized Mark McGwire and the Bash Brothers. And it's crazy how it all comes full circle. And now I'm making baseball cards of him that I used to collect when I was a kid, you know?
Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah, and those are different times for the Coliseum too, where you had, you know, Mount Davis wasn't there yet. That beautiful view of the Oakland Hills, like, you know, the good times for the Coliseum right there.
Yeah.
But I know your path to like becoming a full-time artist, that took a lot of twists and turns. We'll get a little bit into that. But were there any artistic influences you picked up even before that became like a full-time career for you, especially growing up in the Bay Area, maybe going around San Francisco, Oakland? Were there some things you kind of picked up along the way
up in the area? I don't know if it was necessarily like location specific, but I've always been drawn to like graffiti and street art style, which definitely inspires, you know, the art that I make. So I think I was a big Banksy fan long before I was a professional artist. He's just awesome and like mysterious, you know, which is a fun element to it. I've always been a Shepard Fairey fan for quite a long time. So I think it's same with Andy Warhol, actually. I really like, which obviously isn't graffiti per se, but changed the game with pop art. I think those people all influenced me, but like I said, like those aren't location specific to being in the Bay Area. Think I was exposed to a lot of cool art, you know, especially like I think Berkeley area has a lot of really cool kind of street art and culture.
It's not just you know, walking around the streets like in this area, there's so many incredible museums and stuff like that that I'm sure it's easy to just kind of soak it up all in. You mentioned I definitely see a lot of that influence, the pop art, more abstract stuff in a lot of your art. And when did this move to like becoming a guy who is known for like athlete portraits and making art for these big time football players, and now you're talking, now you're working with Tops. Yep. When did that shift begin for you as an artist?
So that would have been October of 2017. I had been painting full time for a couple years, and I was delivering art to a client, and I met this guy in Las Vegas. His name is Jared Fazen. He played for the Saints, and I think he played for the Patriots for a time. Yeah. So he was an ex-NFL player and now an manager of NFL players. And so he thought my art was cool and would be a good fit for those guys' taste. And so he kind of helped get my foot in the door, specifically in the NFL space. And it started out doing some free paintings essentially for promotion for some of his clients. And he made sure that I got the promotion that we were looking for. and it kind of just snowballed from there. And so it ended up really being like the perfect storm for a client. So I think, you know, from my marketing background, I knew that having a niche and something specific was important. Then when I stumbled into the sports stuff, like it hit me, like these guys have disposable income to spend on the art. There's amazing pictures of them online doing amazing things. And then the kicker is they're all super competitive. So once one guy gets a painting, the next guy wants a bigger painting or two paintings. And, you know, I've seen that happen in the locker rooms. Like I had a whole strategy of like delivering my art. I would never ship it to the homes. I would always ship it to the training facility and unbox it. And the training facilities will unbox the player's mail and they'll put the mail in the locker. And so it's like this big painting sitting in the locker. And then every time I do one painting, it turns into a second one, you know, usually. And so that was like a really cool and fun thing to discover, you know, about 3 years into my like full-time art career of focusing on it every single day. And ever since then, it's been a really fun ride. I mean, I've gotten to meet some really cool players, done really cool charity events, raised a lot of money for good causes with these guys, you know, developed friendships with some of them. And now working with Topps is even a whole different level. So it's really cool.
Nice. Yeah, I think we maybe got to up our marketing game. Let's drop off some free cards to some athletes' locker rooms, get everyone jealous. That's a good call. I'll tell the guys about that.
So
you've been working with athletes now for a few years. Yep. What about athletes do you think makes them great artistic subjects? I mean, to put on like my art history hat for a moment, like you've been seeing guy, you know, in you're talking like ancient Greece, they're making art of like Olympic athletes and stuff that's lived on for thousands of years. And like, and here we are in 2021. Yeah. And they're still really these athletes are still such a great artistic inspiration for a lot of people. What do you think about athletes makes them a great artistic inspiration, great artistic subjects?
I think that that athletes and what they accomplish and do with their bodies is like inspiration for what like the human body can do. You know, they push their bodies to the limits and do kind of challenge what we know as possible. And so, you know, you see certain things that stick in your head, like the OBJ kind of backwards one-handed catch, you know, like, I don't know how many times I've watched that clip and just think like, man, how does that, like, how do you do that? So I think that's fun, you know, capturing those type of moments. And then, you know, also even before I started focusing on sports, I really enjoyed making portraits, and specifically faces. And so that I think is fun with the athletes too. You know, it humanizes them, and takes, you know, the unattainable things they can do and puts it on everyone else's level. I think, you know, everyone's just got a face. So I don't know. I mean, I think like, it's just faces have always been interesting to me. And so, and now it lends itself so well to like baseball cards where it's combining both worlds, and I'm really getting to like hone in on my portrait, abilities. And, it's been rad.
Is there any athlete you haven't done a piece either for or done a painting of that is on your bucket list of guys that you would like to put on canvas?
Yeah, Jerry Rice.
So I like the sound of that. Yeah,
49ers fan. And also it dawned on me that you were talking about Levi Stadium of the Niners. I actually did go to one game at Levi, which was so much fun.
It's a great place. I like it. I know it's a little divisive around here, but I like it a lot. Yeah.
It was actually, I believe it was Jimmy G's first home start, and they like upset like the Patriots or something, which was just Jimmy G's old team. So I don't know if it was that like poetic justice perfect, but it was great like that, where it was his first start at home. It was at the end of that season where he won like his first six games. It was
went on that crazy tear.
Awesome. Sorry, I got sidetracked on Levi's, but what was the question?
Any other? I know you mentioned Jerry Rice, a guy that to make a piece for. Anybody else that comes to mind?
You know, so like I've done a couple Michael Jordans for other players. Other pro athletes have commissioned me to paint a Michael Jordan picture for them. Doing an MJ for him would be really cool.
Yeah.
You know, same with like LeBron. Man, it's crazy. You know, some of those guys, they're larger than life. Tom Brady. I'm excited to watch that. You know, I honestly, like, I wasn't really a Tom Brady fan Patriots fan. But now that I'm like immersed in the art world with these guys, I meet guys on every single team and they're all just cool people. So like I become fans of the players more so than the teams. So because of that, like old, like spiteful things where I'd be like, I don't like Tom Brady. I don't want Tom Brady to get another Super Bowl. Like now I'm like, you know, rooting for everyone. I think that's going to be a really special Sunday. Last Super Bowl, I was in Miami doing a Cam Newton Super Bowl party. And that was like a bucket list thing. I got to meet him. That was cool.
That's incredible.
But
I think something you notice, and you know, I've worked around in and around sports, but yeah, when you are in that world, it's, you kind of separate the fandom and you realize, oh, these are just people, like, you know, they've reached these incredible heights. But yeah, you're right, and it's much easier to just root for like the person rather than just the team. So let's talk a little bit about your work with Topps. I mean, this is a big week for Topps too. We've got Product 70 Series 1 baseballs coming out, so Topps is hot right now. I want to talk about your 1951 top set. How did that all come about?
Man, it's great timing because we actually just got the first couple boxes like in hand. I hadn't seen the cards. They're beautiful.
I love the look of them. Yeah.
Yeah. They look nice. I'm really happy with the quality. So when Project 2020 started really taking off around last summer, Topps started reaching out to us artists and said, "Hey, we're interested in doing stuff with you in the future." And they explained that they would both come to me with ideas and projects that I could be involved with, like Project 70, or I could also pitch them ideas and say, you know, bring to them concepts and say, "Hey, tell us whatever you want to do and we'll see if we can make it happen." And so I first pitched them doing the T206 cards because I liked the smaller format. I think that was interesting. Those cards really focused on the head and the portrait shot, you know, they're portrait cards.
Yeah.
And I felt like that played well to my art. And so we went down that, we explored that. And for a while, I actually thought that was what was going to be my set, is it was going to be wave 7 of T206. They ultimately decided to stop at 6, but they're like, and I also told them, like, I like the older car, you know, the vintage stuff is fun graphically. And so they came back and they said, "Hey, how about this? We'll do the 1951, which is our first year that we ever had baseball license. And now it's 70 years later, and we're going to spend the whole year creating sets around celebrating those 70 years. And so what better way to start the year than kicking it off with our very first set remixed?" And so that was like, it's a huge honor to have the first set of the year. You know, we have five rookies in wave 4 that's live now that, you know, have the rookie card logo. It's the first card of them to get the rookie logo. So like some people, well, you know, everyone, there's always arguments about what's the true rookie or whatever, but
right.
You know, some people will probably argue that this is like the true rookie card for a handful of guys. And, you know, if some of those guys turn out to be studs, like they have a show potential to be, then those could be really, really cool cards to have, you know, in my arsenal of things, you know, projects I've worked with. So it's a huge honor. As far as player list, like they gave me the full player list on that one of who I was going to do.
Okay.
But they had accidentally put Pujols on there twice. And so I knew there was one spot. And it's crazy because before Hank Aaron passed, but I had said, "Hey, Hank's not in the set and I feel like he would be a great fit for it." And that's one thing that I love about Topps is they're always super open-minded about stuff like that. And so we made that happen. Yeah. And so it's been a really cool experience. And now literally today getting them in hand and seeing another card. And it's different too, because they're a little smaller than normal cards,
right?
The rounded corners. But they're a fun size and they're like a nice thickness, but like the Project 2020 cards were in the cases, the Ultra Pros, and sealed with the sticker and stuff. And it, like, you don't get the same tactile, like touching the actual card. I think it's a fun memory for me about baseball cards is like feeling them and, you know, kind of flicking them around. But
absolutely, yeah, I think that is the fun to me of the hobby, is it's about the mystery of like what's in there, just the feel of actually getting the card, like just that excitement, that rush, you know. And it's great to have a nice encased card that you can put in your collection and stuff. But yeah, I totally agree. Well, they're beautiful cards. I'm loving them, so I'm probably going to pick up a set myself. Before we move on, I do want to, you mentioned Project 2020, let's talk a little bit about that before we get a little more into like Project 70 and maybe what's on the docket for this year. Sure. How'd you get involved in that? What was some of the, did the TOPS come to you about that? And what were some of your inspirations for some of the things you did? I mean, the Bob Gibson card is one of my absolute favorite looking from the project. And then obviously the Mike Trout and that Mariano Rivera Bowman too, where that's such, just such an iconic card in itself.
Yeah, it's kind of cool crazy, to see that. Crazy card to work with. So, you know, it's funny. I mentioned about, you know, doing free work to get my foot in the door with the NFL. I was doing something similar with the Premier Lacrosse League, PLL. I played lacrosse through high school and college, and I'm a lacrosse fan. And so this guy, Paul Rabel, along with his brother, Michael, started the PLL a couple years ago after several professional lacrosse leagues have kind of tried and haven't really hit their stride in terms of mainstream professional sports. And so I was just excited what they were doing with this new league. I saw that they were like setting up new office space, headquarters in LA. And so I just offered to make him a couple paintings to ship to the office and, you know, like as a congratulations on starting your league. And so I did that, and Paul was super nice and receptive. Both of them were. And so they put them up in their office, and they do a lot of video content, and they're always in the office. So it's the paintings are always in their videos. And Jeff Heckman, who works for TOPS, is a big lacrosse fan, and so he watches that content, and he always was seeing those paintings. And eventually he saw one time when Paul had said, like, oh, these are by this artist Blake Jameson. And so he went to my website and filled out a contact, like the normal contact form. And like, I thought it was fake when I got the email, like, new contact form submission. And, you know, I didn't get them that much anyways. And usually it was like a spam message or some junk.
Yeah.
And he set up a phone call with me, and we talked like later that week, and he explained the project, and I just was like, yeah, I'm in. And then, you know, it's contract negotiations and stuff. But it also is like, there's always a long runway of like when a project is kind of conceptualized to like when it launches, or like to today, for example. They just told the roster of Project 70. Like I didn't know the full roster until today, because I think they didn't want it to leak. But like, I've known about the project and a big percentage of the artists for like 6 months, and I haven't been able to talk about it until like last week, which is tough sometimes, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, tough to keep a good secret. I totally hear you. But, what was the general reaction you feel like you got from Project 2020? And I guess it kind of will be the sort of same reaction for Project 70, specifically within the trading card hobby. You know, obviously you've got your general sports fans. You've probably had your experience with them, but like now you're getting into like an even more like a subset of that group where, you know, you said it, like there are people who are like, well, that's not the true rookie. Like the true rookie comes from the first top set, like, or the first Bowman or whatever it may be, you know, very specific. So to then have some creative license with a lot of these like iconic cards, like, did you get some blowback maybe from people who are diehard trading card enthusiasts? Kind of how did you maybe bring some of those people back? Like, hey, like, here's what we're doing. You know, we're doing something maybe a little bit different.
Yeah. Look, man, you put anything on the internet, especially if it starts to get popular, you're going to get haters. And also, you know, in the hobby is filled with a lot of really nice, generous people, but there's also some toxic people that are really hard to make happy. You know, they're so overall, the feedback I got was positive from art collectors of mine that got nostalgia from collecting their old, you know, baseball cards and maybe busted out their old collections. It brought in a lot of new fans for me because all of a sudden people could get a tiny piece of my art for $20, which was never a thing before Project 2020. You know, it'd be at least a couple $100 for a print. And so like just bumping down to that price point, I know a lot of people said $20 for a baseball card is expensive, and there's an argument to be made there, but for a tiny piece of art, it's really cheap. And so, you know, that helped, that was really cool. I tried, you know, I grew up collecting cards and then I fell out of it for a long time. And I was very open and transparent about that in all of my interviews and all the content I put out. I did a lot of live streams. And so I was really honest about that and said, hey, I used to collect cards. I don't know anything about the current players or the current teams. Like, you guys helped me learn. And also ultimately people helped me like start collecting again, because they would say, oh, you like Mark McGwire? And they'd send in some cards, you know? Nice. So yeah, I mean, I think overall, like I tried to go deep in the hobby, and you know, even like, you know, on like blowout forums, which is, you know, some of the more hardcore people, there was some negativity there and still is. There's still people that don't like the Project 2020 as a concept, and now they're bummed that they're doubling down with Project 70. But there's, I would say, a lot more people that are excited about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's funny, you know, you ever see the, is it like Jimmy Kimmel reading mean tweets?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, celebrities reading mean tweets. So I have this folder, and I actually realized I need to pull it off a external hard drive, but I started just screenshotting like the mean stuff, and just putting it in a folder. And that was kind of my way of acknowledging it. And then like setting it aside and saying, you know, and you know, I will respond to people. If people say like, oh, I don't like that art, you know, people made fun of my Trout card, saying that he looks like Sloth from the Goonies. And, you know, I think it's funny. Like, I mean, that's hilarious to me. I know that that offends like a lot. Some people think that's really offensive and like, that's a bad look for me or for Mike Trout or whatever, but I'm like, well, whatever. It's like, it's kind of a interesting, like he's making a weird face hitting the ball in that photo. Like that's just what I'm working with. So
yeah,
sorry, that's the best I could do. And like, I'll just tell people that. And some people will be like, get a different career, you know, or whatever. And some people will be like, okay, well, at least you're human. Like who cares? Yeah. It's just a mix, man. I don't let the hate bother me, but I also try not to let the praise get to my head. So I just try and like, you know, tell people, okay, thank you, and then keep it pushing.
Yeah, that's all you can do. Yeah, just gotta just move it on, and then positive energy. It's really all you can do. Mm-hmm. How about Project 70? I know you were doing like a lot of live streams during the Project 2020 project. We're gonna see that again with Project 70.
Yes. Sorry, there's a siren going by. Okay. I'm right in the middle of a busy street.
It happens.
Yeah. So the way that happened is, for a little context, I worked in marketing before quitting that job at the age of 30 to pursue painting full time. And the marketing job specifically was like content marketing, creating video content and blog content and images to share on social media for brands. And so I've always known that important, and especially now video content's important. And so I started just casually, I would have something cool to do in the studio. Like I'd be here and I'd get a bunch of Don Mattingly cards that I have to open from tops and try and find the gold one of one. And like, I just turned on a live stream and opened like 300 cards, didn't hit the gold. and then I did one live stream specifically where I was painting my Ricky Henderson card, which was my third card. And I actually painted it live and people just went nuts and like loved it. And so then I basically almost immediately was like, okay, I'm going to live stream every single night. And while I'm a painter and I paint full time, I don't paint something every single day always, you know, there's a lot of other stuff to do in the business. Yeah. And so then I started mixing it up on this lives and I'd be like, okay, well, I want to learn baseball cards. I want to start collecting again. I would go out and buy nice boxes and I'd do breaks. And like, at first it's funny to look back at some of them. I'm doing like a Heritage, Topps Heritage. And it's like, I don't even know how to say the players' names, 'cause I'm just that out of the loop. But like these guys are helping me and seeing me till like the end. I'm like, I can flip through a pack and I know like which cards are good and which players are, you know, whatever, show potential. So yeah, I mean, that was a really fun thing. Good way to connect with the fans. It made them feel like they were a part of the art. And sometimes they were, like, I would literally be like, hey, everybody that's on the live stream right now, should I paint this background pink or blue? And whatever they said, I'd be like, okay, cool. And then that's what would go to Tops. So that was really fun. I think I also filmed a lot of content behind the scenes that wasn't live streamed and broadcast, and it was never edited. And so now I found some very competent video editors that I'm very excited to work with that are helping me take that story and all that footage and create video content around that. So I think this year I want to try and find a little bit of a balance. I think streaming every night last year was overkill, but really like trial by fire and learning a new thing. 'Cause I hadn't really done live streams. And then all of a sudden I'm like, all right, I'm going to do a live stream show every single night. And like, it's set up lights and shit and like have a microphone. Sorry for cursing. You know, so yeah, I mean, I just, dove all, you know, I do one thing and I'm like going to go all in. And so that was a really fun thing. And now I just want to find a good balance where I can always like every day I want to give people video content, it just might be live or it might be pre-recorded. And the pre-recorded might be from, you know, a weekend trip to Vegas that Andy and I took last year and then like broke cards in a hotel room in Vegas, which was awesome. And like no one ever saw that. But yeah, it's it'll be a good mix of live and edited content.
That's awesome. That's really cool to hear. And yeah, seeing those live streams too was just like a cool way to just, you know, kind of go behind the curtain and really get a peek. That I don't feel like a lot of people who, you know, they're not in that world. They don't know anything about it. So it's cool that you provided people that window into your world. A couple more questions for you.
Sure.
We're talking about cards as art a little bit. I think we've touched on that a little bit, and it's something that, especially in the last year, where this hobby's really grown into something bigger than maybe it's ever been, you're starting to hear people say, like, and I specifically cite, I think I saw it was Gary V who said, like, this generation, the millennials and the Gen Z, they're going to look at like owning a Michael Jordan rookie card as like their version of owning like a Picasso or something like that. Sure. It's a bold statement, but I think there is a little bit of truth to it, especially where you guys like you and obviously the Project 2020 and Project 70 are really bridging that gap. So where do you stand on the thought that, you know, 20, even maybe even sooner, 10 years down the road, we're going to be treating these cards like, you know, priceless works of art?
Yeah, I mean, I believe that completely. I think I saw it a lot over the Project 2020 in engaging with my fans. Is there's so many personality traits between an art collector and a baseball card collector, and essentially what it boils down to is we as individuals find an item that is, you know, has some type of value in the market. And some people are in it for that part of it. But like a lot of it is like, this card has a story to me. And because of that story, it is very valuable to me. And so I assign like this imaginary value in my own head to some physical, something because of the story that I have around it in my head. And that goes for baseball cards, just like it goes for a painting that you get. And so when I see these art collectors coming into the baseball card hobby, they get really hyped about a card because it has that story to them. I think it's going to be great. And I think this year now, you know, we can finally talk about it. Like Snoop Dogg, right? He's in Project 70.
Yeah.
That is bananas. I remember when I heard that, it was a long time ago, and I didn't know if it was going to be confirmed or true until today. But that is going to bring in a whole different subset of people. And some of these kids and adults and people are going to get into the hobby and get stuck there. You know, they're going to go down the rabbit hole. And the cool thing is now is like, if people come into Project 70 through Snoop and then they discover my work and then then they find my Project 1951 and Project 2020 work, like they're going to want to go get those. That's going to help the secondary market prices of my Project 2020 cards because Snoop Dogg is in Project 70. And it's like, that might seem like a stretch, but it's not. Like I can see that like having a direct impact, which is amazing.
Yeah. That's so cool. And whenever I can scoop up the Snoop Dogg rookie card, like I'm all in. I don't know. There might be, you know what? There used to be like music cards. So there may actually be a Snoop rookie card somewhere around. Yeah. So yeah, whenever that drops, I'm getting it. Last one for you. I want to leave everyone maybe with a little inspiration on the way out, because you mentioned you didn't really start doing this till you're around 30 years old. You took that trip that was sort of an eye opener. Mm-hmm. I just want maybe a little bit about what convinced you to make that switch. You know, it's 30 years old. It's certainly not. It's certainly not a midlife crisis. Yep. I would sure hope not as 30, being 30 right now. But definitely, I think there's a lot of people out there who feel like maybe they're 30, 35, and feel like, you know, I'm doing what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I don't have the time to pursue those passions. So maybe for people out there who feel like they're at that point where maybe they want to pursue something that they've had a passion for, they have a love for, but just maybe don't have the time or feel like maybe they're just not confident that they can pursue that successfully. Just maybe some thoughts of like, what would you say to those people? And maybe even a little bit about your journey too.
Yeah, of course. So for a little context, so I worked in marketing from graduating college up until I was 30. So that was about, I think, 7-8 years. I was pretty good at it. I was compensated well for it. the industry of social media marketing was growing fast. And I was getting to grow with it, which was awesome. It was the kind of thing where, like, it was at the time, like, there was no college degree for the type of marketing I was doing. But by the time I left that, by the time I left the industry, like, there absolutely were program, like, that was just a normal major, right? Digital marketing.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, I was working this corporate job 9 to 5, and I would be super bummed Sunday night, every Sunday night. And then Friday I'd be super excited. And that was just, you know, it just kind of hit me, like, on my 30th birthday. I was like, man, I can't believe, like, I'm excited for Friday and bummed about Monday. And, like, that's just how it is now. So when I decided to, when I put in notice and left that job, it was not knowing what I was going to do of the art stuff, like you mentioned. So then I left the job, and I took a 5-week trip to Barcelona, Spain, and spent some time in Switzerland. And that was just kind of like a soul searching, like, find myself, hoping that when I got back in 5 weeks, I would know whatever I want to do with the next step. And honestly, I even knew, I'm like, well, I could go back to digital marketing. Like, it's not going anywhere, and it does change fast, but I'm not going to be out of it for, you know, whatever. And it was just kind of like, I had no idea until I got to Barcelona and then got immersed in the street art stuff, like, how much that this art part of my life was missing. And, like, I didn't know that it was even missing because I just wasn't doing it. And then I didn't know that I was missing it. And then I kind of got back into it there, and I had so much fun doing it. And I got back and I'm like, this is what I'm going to do. It was not even a question for me. I was in a really good spot because I had done well in my marketing job. I had bought this house in Arizona. I had spent the 2 years that I was working in that job, like, remodeling the house. That was kind of my art project. When I left the job and decided to do art full time, I sold the house. I moved back in with my parents at the age of 30, rent free. And they have a big property. It's a family property. I set up an art studio in this barn that's on the property. And so, like, I had really, like, the best possible scenario of doing a midlife, quarter life career swap, right? Between, like, a good nest egg that was at least able to, like, I didn't have any looming debts, and I had very little expenses monthly moving in with my parents. So, like, I was just really set up for it. And so I think, and the reason that I'm telling everyone all this is because if somebody else is, like, thinking, oh man, I'm not happy what I'm doing, I want to do my passion, I would do, and if I could go back, I would have done this myself, is I would spend a lot of time leading up to the time you leave your job, nights and weekends, do your thing. And, you know, and this is very Gary Vee-ish, but, like, stop watching Netflix, right? Cancel Netflix, yeah. Get rid of your TV even, or whatever you got to do, and just focus and work on whatever it is that you, like, aspire to be able to do really well. Do that a little bit. I'm also a big fan of, like, Malcolm Gladwell, the 10,000 hour thing. I truly believe in that. I know there's people all over the spectrum on it, but I think if you do something for 10,000 hours and you're focused on it, like, you will be a master at that thing. And so if painting is your thing, try to get to that 10,000 hours as fast as you can using whatever free time you have on nights and weekends. And the faster you can get there, the faster you're going to be able to leave your job and make it, thing where you're doing it, you know, so that time you, like, you might be working 16 hours a day. Well, I work 16 hours a day still, but yeah. I just need to do what I like the whole time, you know? So that's the advice, I guess. Nights and weekends it.
There you go. Yeah. Get the hustle in. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Blake, thanks so much, man, for taking the time to talk to us. We can follow you on Twitter at Blake Jameson, blake.art, the website. We can find your stuff, and obviously go to tops.com for Tops 1951, Project 70 projects on the way. Excited to see it. Blake, thanks so much, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, Cody. Have a good one. Stay awesome.
You too.